Let's welcome Alex Wagner. Did I get that right? Because yes, my English is still getting there, you know, it's on the boat. But welcome.
10 out of 10.
Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah.
For people who are not familiar with your work, how would you describe who Alex Wagner is?
Alex Wagner, in simple words, is a multidisciplinary. Mm-hmm. So focusing on the arts, mental health, emotional intelligence, sober curiosities, let's say. Healthy lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
A dreamer.
Dreamer.
Imaginative. And a kid.
A kid
in an adult body.
Okay. Yeah. So talking about you. Yeah, I'm new to Seattle. Are you a Seattle native? Did you live somewhere else before?
I've only been here a couple of years.
Okay.
So I've been here for, let's say, 2.5 for the sake of this conversation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so you were an artist in Seattle. You're a DJ. That's what I heard from the streets. What's your what's your DJ name?
Yeah,
and what does
DJ,
it mean?
Producer, singer, songwriter. And my artist name is A Single Wave.
Single Wave. What is a, does that special meaning to Single Wave? Or how did you come up with the name Single Wave?
Well, it's interesting. So it's my initials, one. So my initials are Alex Scott Wagner. And I realized I could make it something else.
Something else, okay.
And what that something else became was the astronomer Kepler believed that out of the Big Bang resonated a single harmonic tone. So a wave, right?
Wave,
that resonated out and carried through every atom that was born into existence.
Mm-hmm.
So the principle or the idea of this, right, would be something like interconnectedness.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking about if there's something that binds and ties every molecule that exists in the universe.
Correct.
Yet it's also relativity. It's just a wave, you know, nothing big.
Nothing
it's
big.
Not, we're not tsunami.
Tsunami, correct.
You know, it's just a single wave.
Mm, I like
That's all. So, yeah, it has a lot of, it speaks to a lot of things. I love the ocean too. So I had to have that because I'm a surfer beach bum at heart.
Man, you love, you can swim.
Yeah, I love open ocean swimming.
I can drown. Is that the same thing?
Oh, I mean, that's a good race to the bottom. You know, diving down sometimes. You'll find treasure there.
Oh, so man, I can't wait. Captain's chest, right?
This is true.
As a queer artist based in Seattle, Washington, what are some of the pros, some of the things you have enjoyed here better than how they were in your previous town where you moved from? Has it been better? The platform's better? Rooms better? Clubs better? How's it been?
I would say so far in my life, it's been... Seattle's been exciting for me because, and I can say this as a general message, when you come somewhere wholly as you are, authentically as you are, and you're not there for a particular reason, let's say to exalt yourself like selfishly as an individual, but you're actually there to contribute something to the community, Seattle's been a city which responds very well to that. So I more or less walked into the city. I came into the clubs the first night they opened up. I said, this is what I'm about, this is what I want to do, and I was able to start picking up shows and booking shows and putting them together pretty fast.
Oh, great. And
so I'd have to say that in general, this city's artistic community really welcomed me with open arms.
You said you're a multidisciplinary, so before I get deep into that, you're also a singer-songwriter. What kind of songs, what kind of genre do you focus on?
I've been called the Pink Floyd space disco before, so I mean that'd be an amalgamation of a few things.
Okay.
It's a combination of my influences range from Coldplay, Death Cab for Cutie, a little bit of David Bowie, heavy Pink Floyd, a little bit of the Beatles, and then you go into your dance music era. So you have your Dead Mouse, you have other notable, I'd say mainstream. I was influenced a lot more by commercial or mainstream dance music. Super deep underground cuts. I wouldn't call myself a crate digger, but I'm a weaver, a basket weaver.
Weave through genres.
I weave a lot of different ideas and genres together to make a completed package.
Which particular concert or which particular show do you consider a highlight of your music or DJ gig?
For myself?
Yes.
Playing?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. That's a great question. I'd say one that I really enjoyed is I played a festival called Life is Beautiful back in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really say the ones that I've been doing here in Seattle have been the most fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is because those are ones that are coming much more towards a collective purpose, something beyond, greater than myself.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing something come together that helps a lot of people outside of just me.
Correct.
Like that one festival I did in 2016, that was fun. That was back when I was really trying to notch up things. Mm-hmm. And I was doing heavy electro music and really focusing on the idea of like playing festivals
and the rave. Being in the big place. Yeah.
Yeah. And priorities changed. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that came to the pandemic, really.
We slowed down. We slowed down big time.
Yeah, we slowed down big time. And we identified anguish. We identified despair, hopelessness, and pain, and a lot of things. And an idea of where's my place?
In the world.
Yeah, in the world, in the society. Scheme of things. How do I really fit in, and how do I help? Mm-hmm. And it felt like a time, I think, yeah, the shows and the concerts that have been most notable to me, I'd say even the one I did last Sunday, where I got people together and no alcohol, so we ran people through meditations. You had sound bowls, yoga. Mm-hmm. I ran an emotional intelligence workshop.
Whoa.
And then we had a headlining DJ play. And that, for me, was a show that I'm actually more excited about than many I've done in a long time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for that. That must have been something. That's a whole package show. So you had the meditation part, then at the end, you have enough. That's good. I like that. Should invite me to one of those, bro.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Come on.
You're also a mental health advocate. And I want to pose this question, like, as a queer artist, and in your line of work, mental health advocate, how's your personal journey influenced the themes and messages you present in your art and advocacy work?
It's creating what I needed 10 years ago.
Okay.
12 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a piece when it comes to sexuality or identity and really coming into yourself and accepting yourself. Mm-hmm. Like, that's certainly been a part of my journey.
Mm-hmm.
I also came up with parents of whom had significant mental health challenges or their own difficulties.
Okay.
One is no longer around and the other one I don't talk to.
Mm-hmm.
So it was what I needed 10 or 12 or 14 years ago were safe spaces, colorful spaces, warm spaces, with people who were on the same page as me, who I could have walked a difficult road with. I was in a time where the easiest thing for me to do when I was having serious mental health challenges myself was drink alcohol. Yeah, just, you know, blackout.
Drown your sorrow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice and easy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was not an idea of a sober party. There was an idea of a party where you're going to learn something about your emotions or mental health. It was just unheard of. I never felt those things.
Mm-hmm.
So this, I mean, what I've been doing is very self-interested. It's very much and it benefits other people. Like, I'm constantly on a quest to continue to heal myself and continue to grow and to learn and to overcome the challenges I faced in my past. So it's like, it's my art and my mental health work and everything's dramatically influenced by my personal journey.
I like that. Yeah. Are there artists in the world, like, you dream to work with, collab with, like you look up to?
Yeah. And there's, gosh, I mean, offhand, like, an absolute dream of mine would be Coldplay.
Coldplay came to Seattle, I think.
Yeah, they did. I saw him. I saw him at a... It was Lumenfield, and I saw them at Climate Pledge there last year.
Oh.
And they're a master of the craft of optimism, compartmentalized into a single concert, radiant, technicolor, making everyone feel like they matter. And this idea of interconnectedness is a theme that they consistently now have in their shows.
Okay.
So that would be a dream. Chris Martin's also sober. The whole band, I actually believe, is as well. And that was a part of an agreement they made as a band when they had, Chris especially, had mental health challenges around the time of X and Y. He was drinking a lot, showing up at doors, crying, you know, really unsure of his path, mentally a bit unstable.
Okay.
And that's really what the album was a lot about. X and Y was like this pain and like this conflict and duality, this cognitive dissonance that was being endured. So there's somebody at the largest stage who's created a feeling that I would love to collaborate
with. I like that. At least it's pouring into both of you.
Yeah.
How is your experience as a DJ? And you're a founder of Grooving for Good. Let's talk about that. What's Grooving for Good? What's that about?
Yeah, so Grooving for Good started, it was the advent of the pandemic. And I was talking to a friend of mine and then manager at the time, music manager. And we were sort of, I wanted to do these fundraisers for something called, it was a nonprofit called Crisis Text Line. So I volunteered with them. I did 200 hours with them during the pandemic. And it was a, where it's kind of like the 988 suicide and crisis lifeline where people could write in. You dial, I think it was like 247-247. Mm-hmm. You text a number, and then you would be connected to a crisis counselor. Mm-hmm. So I was one of those.
Crisis counselor.
And you would talk to someone and help them bring them to a state of calm.
Mm.
And I started it. I didn't even realize the pandemic was going to happen. I mean, nobody knew. So yeah. I had done all this training, and I started within like 2 weeks of when the pandemic hit. And getting, just seeing the reaction of the world and seeing what the service did and the data they collected and inspired me. And I was like, I want to raise money for them. I want to do something for them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we did 3 virtual fundraisers, and closer, I think it was come time of the second one,
mm-hmm.
we were just sitting around and talking, and my friend said, he's like, dude, you're just grooving for good stuff, yeah. man.
And
I looked and I was like, that's a great name.
Grooving, like, grooving for good. Yeah, but that's
all we're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, it's
music,
know.
And good.
Yeah, it's just grooving for good. Mm-hmm. Doing some, moving for something better, moving for better well-being.
Well, well-being.
Now you can come up with more ideas with the name. It took on more meaning as time went on. But it's, yeah, simply just the idea of like purpose-driven creative expression
mm-hmm.
is something that I feel like Grooving for Good embodies.
It's
like
yeah.
bringing people together to express themselves creatively to move towards a healthier state of well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it has really come down to the idea of social emotional learning. So mm-hmm. SEL, emotional intelligence.
Emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. correct. How has this experience, Grooving for Good and you being a DJ, has it allowed you to create spaces that promote mental wealth, being and inclusivity in especially the LGBTQIA. I had to add that IA there yeah. to make sure. Community, everybody.
I think that's a great question. And it's there's a lot of learnings to that.
Mm-hmm.
Creating a space where everyone can feel welcome. I think that's a difficult
task.
That's
a difficult task.
It's a very difficult mm-hmm. task. And it's something to where, you know, we make mistakes
mm-hmm.
and we try to figure out, you know, you try to make sure everyone can be mm-hmm. there.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found is that when you speak towards something that's within all of us,
mm-hmm.
that's where you can start making the safe space. So when I got away personally from speaking a little bit towards the sexuality side
mm-hmm.
and said more, I'm like, okay, that's a part of what can walk us into mental health challenges. But mental health challenges are also coming from social injustices. And they're coming from all these other things. And that's where you start to make a more inclusive environment mm-hmm. when we have this common denominator of emotional dysregulation, adverse experiences, mm-hmm. mental health, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So mental health really became the conduit or the bubble to create a safe space.
Because
we can talk about something that everybody experiences. Like, everybody has emotional issues. Mm-hmm. Everybody has mental health challenges. And so why don't we kind of strip away the fear of the unknown,
correct.
So what you would call a stigma,
mm-hmm.
and we can just have a real conversation, just be human to human about it.
And that conversation is what the community needs.
Mm-hmm.
What's your ideal community looking like? How can you, if you had your little hobbit world to build?
My little hobbit world?
Yeah.
What would my community, that's an interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does it look like? So are we speaking towards like, the environment, or can you tell me a little bit more about your question?
See, my community is comedy. So
okay.
My community will be people waking up. We have a bunch of issues we're laughing out, you know, mm-hmm. things that we're facing every day, but that's the reason we're laughing that day, right? That's the reason we're writing jokes for that day.
Okay.
And so we're not numbing. We're laughing at the things that will drive us to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll be around people who are pouring into each other.
Yes.
So literally we can feel our energy is synced. So we know when someone's not feeling good, or
yes,
we
yes.
check on each other
mm-hmm.
and we build, because your winning is collectively all our winning, because we look up to you. So we have something to look up to.
Yeah.
And our mental health is balanced. We all feed each other because we all love food. That's my ecosystem. What's
we
your ecosystem
all
like?
Love food.
We all love food.
Yeah.
We'll all eat stuff and none will be, it will be judgment free. There'll be music too.
Mm-hmm. So my ecosystem mm-hmm. is somewhere past Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a moon of a distant planet
okay.
where it sort of looks like a Miami sunset on mm-hmm. a plate of glass, where the water Ooh. Is so still,
mm-hmm.
nothing's really moving,
mm-hmm.
except for maybe a few birds and there's some sort of fabric that's just billowing.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like you're in some sort of place of ease, of respite, of mm-hmm. calm, where where there's just stillness, where there is that ease.
Correct.
And so it's a, what the community looks like is an abstraction of everyday life, taking people out of everyday life into a warm world. I would say in general, my community does look sober.
Yeah.
So I'd like people to have clear heads and minds within this space. Correct. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life 24 hours a day, but when we gather, I want you to be clear-headed. And I want us to set a non-judgmental space, make it in a space. Yeah. Like what you said, it's like, this is what we're coming to. We can just put our struggles on a plate, on the table in front of us. And we can find these different ways to, maybe it's laughing, maybe it is through food, maybe it is through music, through spreading some education, but something, just a colorful departure from everyday life that makes people feel like they can be heard, they can be valued, they can be seen, and they can figure out the root of like what's going on in their life. Okay. So, yeah, I see like a bountiful, it's like a little cosmic cafe by a celestial sea.
I like that. Now, when you're writing, you've written a lot of songs, right? Do you have albums out? Do you have, where can people find your music?
So I have little EPs online.
Okay.
It's actually interesting. I'd say, well, you can find it on Spotify and everything else. If you just look up ASW, I think Dahlia is a great place to start. That's an EP I wrote a couple of years ago.
What inspired that album?
What inspired that EP? So that was about a person, EP. A friend of mine, and their experience through the pandemic.
Oh, man.
And I watched them as they experienced significant mental health challenges. They isolated themselves completely from the world. They wouldn't go outside. They were very fearful and they were pensive. They were frightened. They were paralyzed by a world they couldn't understand. And it was, I started going over to their house and they allowed me in and we started hanging out a lot. And I saw like so much potential inside of this person. I learned of a person who wanted to see the world, who wanted to go out there, who wanted to evolve and change past this place they had lived for all their life. And then I found my story in that. And I found a lot of people's stories in that. And so I just created a, it was more or less about a seed that gets planted and blooms and it's a dahlia flower. But it's really just about this, it was more or less about this person and then a little bit about me.
As a DJ, you know, you're an artist as well. How do you deal with conflict? You know, a vendor has not paid you, a club who did not do what they were going to say, a rowdy fan who's forcing you to find his song on the phone.
Yeah, how do you handle tense moments? How do you handle conflict? I think, one, by ultimately reiterating that we're not enemies. It's like, look, we're not enemies here. Let's break this down objectively and see where our disagreement lies. So trying to be as objective as possible. And that's where I've certainly been overtaken by emotion and conflict in my life. I used to get very emotional when conflict would hit. But through a part of why, I mean, emotional intelligence in that sort of field, mental health was so appealing to me, was wanting to learn how to better my emotional responses in difficult situations. So I'd say, yeah, in time of conflict, of being misunderstood, it's creating that moment of pause, creating that stillness to be like, okay, I don't hate you, you don't hate me. However, it seems we do have something we're not in line with. This is, how about we set aside a space where you can say your side, I can say mine, we can look at evidence that we have at either and then come to a conclusion
of
where we are. But I'm somebody who loves evidence. I love backing things up. So ideally I'd like to resolve conflict civilly, amicably, evidence backed.
Thank you. What's your morning routine like on a typical day off?
Typical. I mean, I try to keep my routines all very, very consistent. So these days it starts with like 15 to 25 minutes in a gym. Just lift a couple heavy things and put them down or do some sort of movement that gets my blood pumping. Making breakfast. Saying some gratitude to my partner, I'd say. And then getting my day started.
Just that refreshing.
Yeah, just like just a small, there's, I'd say a routine I like the most that I would love to actually get back into is I used to also, I'm doing it at night right now, but I'd love to shift it back into the morning time is journaling.
Yeah,
writing at least a page.
Yeah.
So I do that at night and I do yoga at night. But I'd love to get that back into my morning because I use how I used to do it was I'd wake up, do yoga, write a page, make my food. Yeah.
As a artist based in here in Seattle, what do you think the scene is missing? What could improve?
What I feel is missing a little bit thus far from what I've seen and a part of what I intend to make a contribution of or push for more is pushing for more sober spaces. So spaces, because I kind of
like
sometimes
AA?
I ask, well, not, no, not necessarily like that.
No,
but in the way where it's just, I ask a question of, okay, we're all hanging out in nightlife and we're all being forced to like peddle drinks.
Right.
Or like push drinks. Correct. It's kind of what it feels like sometimes.
Yes, yes. They're pushing it on us.
Mm-hmm. And then additionally though, I think a little bit to your point, but yes, also a little bit of that AA part, because in a way that's one of the only places that people who don't drink alcohol, like they feel like they can go and meet people. So I sort of identify, it's like identifying a gap. That's not, you don't see nearly as much as, it's like spaces where that whole community can go. People who feel like they've been ostracized or pushed out of nightlife because of their behaviors and their choices and what they're doing. There's not a lot of that there, I'd say. And so that's something that I'm especially keen on next year, doing at least, if I can, an event a month. Where I'm doing some sort of nightlife thing where there's no alcohol.
There's no alcohol. I love that sober. I love that sober journey. That
well, yeah, it's massive. A lot of I mean, cost to society of alcohol is $270 billion, I believe.
That's a lot.
Or that's for mental health overall, but cost to society of alcohol is still egregious. It's in general, it's the one thing that I just want to ask more questions around. I'm like, man, we normalized the heck out of this thing. And if you want to talk about problems in artist communities and queer communities and other ones, alcohol is a big problem.
That's one of the big
like
ones.
How yeah, yeah, like how a lot of us when we feel very misunderstood and disconnected and you know, you're not belonging or fitting even fitting in anywhere, as it's easy to reach for a numbing agent.
I'm coming from Africa. So there's some countries there that are, you know, they have not yet got on accepting and understanding, and there's a lot of misconception and stereotypes out there. For communities that do not understand your community, what's one few words you could tell them, like what's this fear that they have? What do you think it is?
It's the fear is completely unknowing. I mean, it's very difficult for me to put myself in a place of someone who would be fearful.
Yeah.
And because it's like, well, we're not gonna bite you.
Yeah.
We're not gonna hurt you. But I can see and I get it. I get how when we're raised with certain messaging or certain, like, this is how life should be. This is, yeah, like, this is how life ought to be. This is how it should be. You're gonna panic when you see something that's outside of that picture.
Out of that,
outside of that fold.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess when I say to that, when it comes to, you know, if a man loves a man or a woman loves a woman or, you know, however that picture looks like, it's just like, to me, I'm just like, man, it's just biology. It's just how it happened.
Correct.
It's like, I didn't make the choice. You know, yeah. if there is, you know, whatever's upstairs,
yeah,
you know, there is something greater than all of us. I have no idea what it's called,
yeah,
but it made the choice for me. I didn't make this decision.
No.
And it's, that's okay. That's all right. It just kind of is what it is, you know? Hello?
Hi, Alex. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Welcome to the Creative Hustle Show.
Yeah, it's happy to be here.
Yeah, beautiful day. I might have seen you with an umbrella. What was that about?
Well, it's a big rainbow umbrella, and I like walking around with a little bit of sunshine and rainbow in my time.
So,
also, I don't want to get my hair wet.
Oh, so basically Seattle's not giving rainbows. You just decided to bring your own rainbow.
Yeah, I'm just bringing my own rainbow.
Rainbow umbrella. I love it. Okay. So I have some few questions for you over here. First, how early do you think is socially acceptable to put up your Christmas tree?
Man, I think December 1.
December 1st?
Yeah.
December 1st, you will not do it before Thanksgiving, basically.
I don't do it before Thanksgiving. And I have no idea what happened this year, but I feel like people started putting up their Christmas trees in August.
I put up my Christmas tree in October, so I plead the fifth. I will not say more. Okay, and what is your... this is a little weird. What's your least favorite animal?
My least favorite animal? A possum.
Why?
They're just so strange. They look like kind of these bewildered insect-like creatures that came from like the crevice of, I don't know, like a comet that originally is like from the sewer of another planet.
Oh my gosh.
Like, they're just foul.
I thought they were cute. Like, I personally find them cute.
I find them atrocious. And I also think they're gonna jump up and like attach to my neck,
to your neck
and just kill me.
Oh my god, they're so small.
I think possums are foul creatures.
Oh my goodness. Okay, do you play any sports?
No, I do a lot of running away from things. So
running,
I swim,
away.
I bike, and I run. So
swim,
like I run,
bike and
I
run.
I evade.
Okay.
I don't
really
sport.
Huh. Well, okay. But I guess biking, you're in Seattle, you're in the right place for biking.
Yeah.
They're very bike friendly. They even have a specific, they have a lot of legislation around bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a good space. Speaking of, because I know you're not a Seattle native, how have you found the food scene?
It's good.
It's good. What's your favorite restaurant? Do you have a
favorite yet? I have a sushi joint called Mikoto,
mm-hmm,
on 12th Avenue near
really
Seattle
good.
University.
That's really good. Oh,
that's
yeah.
My favorite.
How did you
spot.
Discover that?
I live right by it.
Oh, it's right by your house?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
so
it's just, I love the staff. I love the food.
Uh-huh.
It's my little safe space. Yeah.
Okay, so we are going with sushi then.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Okay.
Sriracha.
And
bowl.
What do you cook yourself? Do you
I hardly cook.
Cook. You hardly cook?
But I more like meal prep, so I make rice, I make eggs, I make chicken,
and then save
I make
it
spinach.
In.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, mm-hmm, awesome. And what's your favorite childhood memory?
My favorite childhood memory, one of them that comes to mind right now, is I had a moment where I was swimming at Reed College Community Pool, and I mm-hmm felt like I could swim forever, and I didn't have to come up for air. And it's a childhood memory I'll forever keep. I just wanted to stay down. I felt like I could stay down there for a half hour.
And how long did you actually stay? Did
I
you
don't
time
know.
It?
I think my brain may have twisted the sense of time, but it felt like I was there for an eternity.
Wow. And your name is a single wave.
It's been water for a very long time.
It's the water factor.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nice. I love it. Thank you for coming out to the Creative Hustle show. And we'll look forward to meeting you out on the streets. Probably go to one of your concerts.
Yeah.
Which I believe there should be one coming up soon. When is your next one?
So we'll have two in January,
mm-hmm,
two in February. So
okay,
there'll be plenty of opportunities. Pretty much two a month, February. And then we're throwing a festival in August. So lots of chances.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep an eye on that. And what's your Instagram? How can we find you?
A single wave.
A single wave.
Mm-hmm.
Single wave.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Be safe out there.
Yeah. Be safe.
Thank you.